Attention contractors, on May 6th, you're invited to a free web class all about hiring. Look, there's no denying we're in a skilled labor shortage, and it feels impossible these days to hire good people. But I've conducted over 2,400 interviews for trades positions, and I'm telling you, this can be done. You're just kind of doing it wrong. So, if you want the best performing job ad templates contractors are using in 2025, some simple interview tactics that are going to double your show up rates, and some tips to become the only place in town that A players want to work, this web class is for you. May 6th, let's make it happen, and I'll see you there.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. If you're watching the video version, you'll notice that I'm not in the studio and you might be wondering why. And I'm going to tell you, it's because the last time we did a big shoot, I completely forgot to write an intro and shoot an intro for this awesome episode. That's the honest truth. The rest of the episode will be back in the studio. Look normal, I promise. So today we're talking about DISC profiles. Those are one of those personality tests that you might be familiar with. If you're like me, you might be a little cynical about these things. Do these tools actually work, or do they just give people an excuse to behave a certain way? Right? That's what I've always wondered. And I think that's why today's guest has become so popular in the world of small business and leadership. Thomas Erickson's best-selling book, Surrounded by Idiots, great title, is less about finding a label to explain why you are the way you are, and more about bringing awareness to how your default behaviors affect others, and how to improve your relationships with people who just don't seem to get you. So if you've ever felt like you're surrounded by idiots, I promise you're going to get a ton out of this episode. Without further ado, let's dive in with Thomas.
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Thomas Erickson, welcome to Contractor Evolution. It's really good to have you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the invitation.
We finally have a fellow Swede. I'm Carlson. You're Erickson. I should have done this earlier. This is going to be an all-timer. So I'm glad I have a countryman. I'm really excited to talk to you today, man. I have a opening question here that I feel like you could probably do multiple podcasts on, but we'll try to maybe give the Coles notes on this and use this to sort of set up the rest of the conversation. But Thomas, when it comes to like individuality and personalities, like why are we the way that we are, and where do our fundamental behavior patterns come from?
Well, it's not that complicated, really, but at the same time, it's kind of complicated. Well, it's the old chestnut about nature versus nurture. When it comes to psychology well, let's call it the science then, even though many people don't consider psychology a science. Half of you is in your DNA, comes from your parents, basically. And when I say half of you, it's not 50.0%. It's somewhere around kind of 47, 53. Nobody really knows exactly what it is. This exists on a continuum. Who knows exactly from individual to individual? And the rest is kind of how you were raised, your first years in school, your buddies, you know, even started from kindergarten, really, actually, your first job and so on and so forth. And it's been said that your personality gets fixed when your frontal lobe is closing, which is actually a physical thing. That's when your brain is working 100%. Let me rephrase myself. That's when the brain works at its best, at least. Because now we can make decisions based on consequences. You can understand what's going to happen if you do A, B, or Z. And that happens around the age of 18, 19 with young girls, and at the age of 23, 24 when it comes to young men. Why is that? I don't know. Don't blame me. You can blame our creator or nature or whoever you like. Nobody really knows why that is. But that's the way it is. And these influences affect us up till a certain age. And then we kind of get fixed in our personalities, basically, which then is shown via our behavior.
Yeah. And for like for the audience, and I'm sure you sort of explained this at least 1,000 times, but a quick refresh of the four personality styles that you talk about in Surrounded by Idiots. We've got red, yellow, green, blue. I think on some level this mimics or is based off of the archetype that's covered in the DISC profile, but you sort of language it and color it in a little bit better. Just maybe walk us through like those four types and give people a bit of a breakdown because I've got some follow-up questions after that.
Right. So this is based on the old DISC profile, right? Which has been around for 40 years or something like that. And it's about extroversion versus introversion. It's about task orientation versus people orientation. So you get sort of a 2x2 matrix. And in one corner, you have red, yellow, greens, and blue. So you get sort of a four basic behavioral traits, we can say, or behavioral profiles, which then can be mixed in a huge number of combinations within each and every individual. Very few people only show one of these patterns, but some do. Red people are task-oriented and extroverted, which means they are really fast-forward thinkers. You know, life is short. Let's put the pedal to the metal and, you know, let's get going here. What are you still sitting around here for, you know? Speed up, you know, a bit harsh on other people because most people are too slow, you know. Very competitive, very, very, you know, super focused. And they are heading ahead of everybody else, impatient as well. Some people even think they are aggressive, which is more of an interpretation than it is something else. The other extroverted profile is the yellow ones, who are extrovert but people-oriented. And these are the shiny ones, the happy ones, the smiley ones. The sun is always shining, even if it's raining and snowing, as it is outside my window right now here in Sweden. Very frustrating. But they will say, no, but you know, the sun is always shining somewhere. You know, you have to stay on the positive side. Those are the yellow types. Creative, influential, super social. They know everybody. Well, not really, but they feel like they do. And when you meet them, you will just feel, you know, seen and heard. They don't listen. They don't pay attention because they forget all the details. They're a little bit ego-centered, I would say, but they are very, very good at making people feel fantastic. Salespeople are not very seldom in that group, actually. Then you have the other people-oriented style, which is the green types, people-oriented and introvert, which gives you more of this calm, caring, sharing, very, very, very polite attitude, you know, very friendly, very helpful, good listeners. These people actually hear what you say, and they will remember what you said, especially if it was something bad. Especially if it was something bad about the green person. That's going to be filed on shelf 1A for eternity. And the reason for that is they will never forget a wrongdoing, you know, because they have a really long memory for those things. They don't like conflicts, so they won't tell you. So they pretend everything is, you know, just perfect. You will see it in their faces. You will see it in the body language. So you ask them sort of, are we good? And they will say, absolutely. So nothing is wrong. Everything is, we have no problem whatsoever, you know. That's what it looks like. Also, changes is a problem for them, you know. Changes. Who asked for changes? Ugh. It was better before. Well, maybe it wasn't better before, but it's worse now, right? That kind of personality style. We should pay attention to those because they are in majority. 47-something percent are mostly green. Not only green, but green as the strongest factor in their behavioral pattern. And then the last one is the task-oriented introvert, which gives you the blue ones, which gives you, let's say, an engineer or a tax sheriff or maybe an accountant, perhaps. Detail-oriented, facts, proof, evidence. How do you know that? I saw it on Wikipedia. Ooh, Wikipedia. Not good, not good. Did you read the report in the original language? Could you give it to me? Well, you know, you don't read German. I can learn, you know, because there has been some very annoying translational errors lately, right? So I have to go back to the original source so they can dig down to the groundwater to find some more details. That's the blue type. Asking questions constantly, a bit suspicious, quality-oriented, quality-focused, and hence a little bit slow-ish, kind of, you know. But it's hard to sort of reveal mistakes they do because they check everything three times. So those are the basics. And then again, you can mix them. These are only, it's not types of people. It's more types within people. Usually we are a combination of two. That's the most common thing.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like these blend a little bit. And I think typically the way that the DISC profile works is you sort of have, they put a line on a graph, you answer questions and you get sort of various scores in various areas. And some people like are super over indexed on yellow and red. That would be me. And then not super indexed on, you know, green and blue. And generally what they say is there's a dominant and a secondary or whatever the terms they use. There's one that you really lead with, and then there's one that also shows up pretty frequently as well. And then the other two generally you don't see as much of. It's not, I don't think, a perfect scoring system, but useful nonetheless. Talk a little bit about, because you said something interesting there. I would assume that there's sort of equal distribution, 25%, 25%, 25%, but you said that sort of almost half of people fall into the green category. So do you have percentages for the other three buckets?
I do. The most uncommon color is actually red. 9.5% of people score red as the highest factor. Again, not the only factor, but mostly red. And the rest is divided, 22, 24, I think, is between yellow and blue. But what's so interesting with this is also the following. There's a lot of this. Probably, I would guesstimate somewhere around 60 million DISC analysis to look into. So there is a huge body of data to sort of dig into. So I know what I'm talking about. You also mentioned it's not a perfect system. No, it isn't. These are giving you the basics of personality understanding, but it's not a personality tool. So you need more to understand fully who another person is. But I think it's a really good framework to begin with. Let's say you give you 80, 85% of all the answers. But one thing that is interesting is the fact that 5% of the people shows one color, only one color. Not to say they don't have capacity for any other color, but what feels natural for them is one color, like my wife. She's red, only red, nothing but red. And she points out the following, you know, 9.5% of the population is red. And only 5% is only red, you know, that makes a half a percentage. So, you know, I'm very unique. And I say, yes, dear, because that's the only response to red person. You can only just agree. Otherwise, you're never going to get out alive. Joking a little bit, but not too much, yeah. Because, you know. And the point is, 2% of people show, 80% of people show two colors, such as yourself, mostly an extrovert, right? Yeah. Could be any combination of any two colors, mostly the ones that are connected, extroverts or introverts or task-oriented people or people-oriented people. And then you have people with three colors, 15% scores pretty high on three colors, as yours truly. I have, unfortunately, three really high bars, which is mostly problematic for myself because some of them are a bit contradicting. So, but I'm struggling with that, actually.
You've survived.
Your self-awareness is a good thing to have.
Thomas, why is it useful to understand a framework like this in the context of running a business and leading people? I can see how this might have some utility in the way that we motivate, the way that we communicate, the way that we just overarchingly deal with the people on our team. But can you maybe elaborate on this idea of where this ought to fit in to how we understand the teams that we build and the businesses that we work within?
Why is it even important? That's actually the right question. Why would you care about people's behaviors and personalities? Well, no one makes it on their own. I'm a self-made man, some people claim, which is A, not true. B, only successful people would acknowledge that, because if one is self-made, we're all self-made. But it's not true, because you will always need other people. You will always need other people to cooperate with, to delegate to, and to get orders from. And everything is a huge collaboration. Sometimes it's between three people, it could be 300 people. And in order to deal with people, you need to be able to communicate, right? You need to be able to be an excellent communicator. And in order to communicate, you need what I like to call people skills. And people skills is, that works like with humor. Everybody thinks they have it. But you and I, we know that's not true. Some people don't have humor, and some people are lacking people skills, let's say. But you have to build people skills, because that is about understanding how you affect other people, actually. Your actions affect my actions. And if you understand in what way and what to do about it, we can sort of maneuver in a complicated conversation and achieve whatever goal there is. But the problem with social skills, people skills, I usually call it social competence over here, but people skills is what you're probably familiar with. But the thing is with people skills is that it's based on one thing and one thing only, that is self-awareness. I mean, where are you located right now?
We're in Vancouver, BC, in Canada.
You're in Vancouver. Okay. I've been to Vancouver once, many years ago. It was cold, such as here, obviously. But the thing is, let's say that I called my travel agency up. Not that we do that anymore, but let's say for the sake of argument, I called them up and I said, hey, get me a ticket to Vancouver. They will say, no problem. And then they will ask me, from where would you like to go? Just imagine I told them, never mind that. Don't be so problem-oriented. Just get me the ticket. How will they solve this issue? Answer, they will not solve it, because you need two dots on the map to sort of connect this flight. Because this is another form of communication. And what people tend to forget about is, it's not enough to know your destination. You also need to know the starting point, which is always yourself. That's you. So if I'm going to Vancouver from London in the UK or from Auckland in New Zealand, it's a very different route. If I don't have both positions, how could I be an excellent communicator? So, and that DISC profile, the four color system, helps you to build your self-awareness. That is step number one. Step number two is obviously to understand other people as well. But I would say that you are always the starting point. So therefore, this is a crucial thing to sort of wrap your head around. And I think this tool is very useful because it's so easy to understand. The colors are really helpful.
They certainly are. Yeah, I know. They certainly are. One of the things that I've always felt with like personality tests like this, and DISC happens to be my favorite because it's the one I've used the most, but there's others. There's Myers-Briggs, there's personality styles inventory, there's a lot. And one of the things that I find maybe limiting about them is I personally think that labels kind of give people sometimes an excuse not to grow, or they give people language, reasons to sort of say, well, I'm this way or I'm that way. And so I think they provide utility insofar as we can get a basic diagnostic or heuristic guide about who we are and how we interact in the world. And then we can apply that to other people, and we can make more, we can make better decisions around how we interact based on how those two pieces of the puzzle fit together, a red and a blue. These are the points where they'll often have conflict, or a green and a yellow, this is something you really need to watch out for. So I find them really useful there, but then at the same time I find them sometimes frustrating, because it's like I hear this all the time. I say, well, I'm a red person, so I can't learn to have better manners, and I also can't really learn to pay attention to detail. And it's like, that's not true at all. And so maybe you can elaborate on like where these have utility, and then where people should almost take caution with them.
Right. That is of course the right question. The thing is this: every tool can be hurtful if you use it the wrong way. But that's more in the eyes of the beholder. If you are an idiot, you can misuse basically anything.
Right.
You can use a knife to cut your steak. You can also, cut somebody else with it.
That's a good point.
That's more of how you choose to use it. And some people are actually not good people, and they are sort of misusing these things. I would argue that when it comes to recruitment, right? A lot of people use similar tools, the DISC, or as you mentioned, the Myers-Briggs or the Big Five or whatever. That's really not the point here. But a lot of people use these for recruitment purposes, which is, I think, absolutely okay. However, they need to do it with a certain purpose. They need to do it a bit cautiously. They have to understand it's not going to give you all the answers, but it might give you the questions. Because if you are recruiting a new team leader at your firm, let's say, you need someone who sort of can take a few difficult decisions. You need someone who kind of, you know, don't... They're not afraid of conflict. Maybe they can be hard workers. They can see the bigger picture rather than digging into the details or whatever. Or maybe quite the opposite. What do I know? But the thing is, these tools can help you to figure out how to let's say interview this person or how to deal with them when they are on board, so to speak. But it never gives you the full story. And as you said, a lot of red people say, well, I'm red, so I can't behave, you know.
Yeah.
Or I'm green, so you just have to live with it. No, I don't. It's on you, buddy, to actually make something out of it. If you think you can walk around on this planet to just behave like some complete fool, no, sorry. That's why you feel that you are surrounded by idiots. Hence the title of the book, really, because a lot of people feel like that. I'm the only one who gets it, you know. Interesting enough, according to my own research, I have found that some people seems to be surrounded by more idiots than others. Why is that? That's a bit of a conundrum.
That now, is a conundrum.
Some people are some kind of sort of idiot magnets, you know, who draws weirdos and lunatics to themselves. I mean, it's really strange. And then if you feel that everyone around you is a complete fool or a moron or incompetent, you need to ask yourself a couple of questions. Who is the common denominator in all these conversations? You have to sometimes view yourself in the mirror, and these tools can help, but you need to pay attention to it and you need to use it in the same way. The same way as they are meant to be used. And some do and some don't.
Do you notice in the research that certain personality types, certain colors cluster into certain roles in an organization? The obvious sort of the obvious assumption someone might make is that, you know, like leaders are always reds, or reds always gravitate towards leadership roles, or blues always gravitate towards, you know, being an accountant or a CFO, or like the, you know, there's certain there's clear lines that can be drawn. And the question is, like, is that too simplistic? Is that a stereotype? Are there as many exceptions to the rule as there are the rule? Or is that actually kind of useful to understand how they cluster in a business?
Well, this is a bit sensitive, but I think Canada and Sweden is on the same side of the table here. I mean, there's an old saying, you can be anything you want, you know. Your mother told you can be whatever, which is, of course, not true, because you can't be anything you want. You can probably be more than you thought you could be if you work on it. I wanted to be a basketball player when I was young. Problem was too short, you know, like 6'2", too short. Could compete with guys who were like, you know, 6'10". So no, you use centimeters, don't you?
No, it's weird. Great. We do like, I'm 6'3". Like, that's what we would say in Canada, even though we use the all metric right. system everywhere else. Don't ask me why. Height and weight, we use pounds and feet, foot and inches. But
okay.
Anyway,
I'm not going to understand that. How
do it in centimeters.
Forget about that. All right. 183 centimeters. But the point is this, I was too short. So then I wanted to drive Formula One cars. Too tall. I didn't fit into the cabin. I mean, life has treated me very unfairly now, haven't it? So I had to go find an occupation where my height didn't matter. So I started writing books. This sounds like a funny story, but that's just the way it is. Sometimes we are more suited for certain things. And the same thing goes with personalities and behaviors. If you are, you mentioned, are all leaders red? Absolutely no. I would say a lot of managers have the red factor in them. And I changed from leaders to managers because being in a managing position is not doesn't equal being a leader, because a leader is someone people want to follow. The manager is the one you have to follow, not the same person, maybe. And the thing is this, It's true. The higher up in a hierarchy, in bigger organizations, this is very clear. The higher up in the hierarchy that you reach, you will see more and more red behavior. Does that mean they are the best managers? Maybe, but then again, maybe not. But they have sharper elbows, right?
Right.
They are tougher, more harsh, more hard, more aggressive, more competitive. And they understand it's going to be lonely at the top. But they can live with that. Because if you don't like them, well, that's on you. Couldn't care less. But for most of the other types, especially yellows and greens, ooh, you dislike me. Now, that's a problem. For a red person,
I don't
know you. Who are you? What's your name? I don't care. But for a yellow person, oh, God, they dislike me here. Oh, wow, that's really, really bad. That's really, really bad. So the point is, if you need, let's say, a tough leader, if you need someone who actually can take a few punches and be there for you, maybe stand in the way when it comes to competition or, you know, negotiations or anything, stand your ground and protect his business, let's say, or her business for that matter, then you need the red factor. You don't need the green factor. If you are working in a service management system, maybe you need a green factor. So it kind of depends, actually. Salespeople are very often have the yellow trait in them. I have some statistics on salespeople because I work with sales organizations since, you know, mid-90s. I would say 70% of all sales reps I have trained, which is about 10,000, roughly speaking, the last 30 years, I would say 70% score highest on yellow, not only yellow, but mostly yellow, because they are social, they are open-minded, they are creative, they are good with people, they sort of are very likable, you know, positive, smiling, as I mentioned before. So people tend to like them. That's good when you're in sales. If they don't like you, that's not good when you're in sales. And yellow people understand this, right? Do blue people usually go into engineering and accounting? Yes. Is that the only thing they can do? No. But they are good with details. If you can put it in an Excel sheet, excellent. Let's do that. And they love it. Yellow people hate it, but blue people love it. So, sort of a complicated answer, but still, no, everyone doesn't fit everywhere. And I think it would be wrong to try to force yourself into a corner because your father told you so. You should be a lawyer, you know, study law for 10 years and go into, I don't know, complicated stuff, equity stuff. But you're not good with details and you hate research. Mm-hmm. That's going to be really hard on you. Maybe you shouldn't violate who you really are. Maybe you shouldn't violate your personality. Maybe you should actually a little bit look into yourself intrinsically and think, when do I feel really good about myself? Is it when I work on a detail matter? Or is it when I work with the bigger picture? Am I best around people? Or do I work best, you know, when I'm, you know, by myself at a desk behind a closed door? It actually depends.
Mm.
And hence also really, really useful when it comes to self-awareness. The more you understand about you using, let's say, the four color system, the more you realize why you feel bad in that situation, but so excellent in that situation, it actually makes perfect sense. But you have to sort of dig into it.
That's how
I use it.
I love how you kind of took us through all that. And it seems, you know, this is probably an obvious statement to people and maybe it doesn't need to be said, but I think you want to put yourself in situations where you give your strengths a chance to shine. Like put yourself in a role, in a business, in a culture, in a core function where those God-given traits actually do have a snowball's chance in hell of leading the way for you. But you don't, and this is the part that bugs me and I commented on earlier, you don't want to over-index on that so hard that you stop working on your weaknesses. And I really think that I see that a lot with people. I just, you can, like, if you look at, you know, engineering, you look at a factory line, you look at the way a business process works, you want to, in order to make a business system better, you don't make the thing that you're good at better. You, what they call attack the bottleneck. So you have to fix the weakest point in order to improve the whole system. And I don't think humans are dissimilar. Like, I get better in business not by sort of learning how to be more persuasive or more chatty or like the things that I'm already good at. I would get better at business by learning how to become more detailed, a little bit more diligent, learning some analysis skills. These are all things that I think are in my best interest to improve on. And that will make me better than sort of getting an extra percentage point on the thing on the, in the area that I'm already really strong at.
Right. Well put. I could just underscore everything and completely agree. There is a tool called, you can edit this out if you want to afterwards, if it doesn't
fit
your narrative. There is a tool called Strengths Finder, which is exactly what it sounds like. Define your strengths and the message is, and work on those. And that is goes completely against everything you just said, because then you should only do things that you are good at and make them even stronger. Fine. However, it's going to be a struggle through life. If you're an entrepreneur, if you're running a business and you're not good with numbers or Excel sheets or accounting or whatever, but you actually have to pay some attention to it, you can, of course, say, whatever, I'm yellow, I'm bad with numbers, you know, I can't do that. Well, then you better hire someone you trust that can take care of those things for you, or you actually work on your weaknesses, as you just said.
Well, this is
that's hard work.
Yeah, this remains, sorry to interrupt, Thomas, this remains an open question, I think. There's a lot of people that will say, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk is a very well-known speaker and sort of business guru in North America, and he, you know, he's well-known for saying over and over and over, like triple, sort of, your weaknesses, triple down on your strengths. That's the only way to become successful. And I don't actually know if I subscribe to that anymore. And I think that works for maybe people in businesses, employees. But if you're a leader and you've chosen entrepreneurship, whether you realize it yet or not, you have chosen a path that requires deep multidisciplinary skill sets. And so I don't really, I mean, and look, this isn't my opinion. The data is clear on this. Like the business owners are like, well, I'm not a numbers guy. They go bankrupt, right? Like it doesn't matter how sort of like persuasive you are and how aggressive you are and how sharp your elbows are. Like if you are really bad with details and don't understand financials because you never learned, like you will end up in a very bad spot. And so I think context is important. If you are just going to choose a career in sales and it's a very narrow role, this is fine. Triple down on your strengths. But if you're leading a business, you have no choice. Your hands are tied. You have to be good, at least competent in a whole bunch of different stuff.
If you are leading people, you have to follow up on people. Let's say that you are recruiting. Good example, that just last summer, a friend of mine in the same business here in Sweden, another guy traveling the world, super competent. You should have him on here because he's really something. He almost got completely robbed of his whole business since 20 years because he trusted somebody on his team, specifically recruited by himself, put in a certain spot, and they almost killed the whole business. He could have gone bankrupt, lost his house, everything. He would be completely out of business, and I don't know what he would do. Because he said, I didn't want to pay attention to these boring things, but I trusted her, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a good recipe for success. You don't need to be an accountant to sort of give feedback to the accountant, but you have to at least take a look and see, are we on track? Give me the big picture. What does this number mean? Why is it red over there and black over there? What do you mean with this? Where's the money? I checked the bank account. Not much in there, you know. The tax, the IRS called me up and that didn't sound good. So I think what Gary Vee is good at is making punchy one-liners on social media. And he's got probably a gazillion people he can delegate anything to. So no, I think he's an inspiration. Super cool guy. But with you, I would say, not that you said it to 100%, Benji, but I would say I would disagree with Gary on this point.
Yeah.
It could also go too far. My struggle is I am a little bit of a perfectionist. Maybe close to being a control freak, if you ask my wife, who is my CEO for that matter, so I won't fiddle with things I shouldn't fiddle with. Basically, not a joke. She would say, stay out of it, you know. But I kind of, yeah, what's going on? What are you doing over there? I'm sort of curious. No, you're just controlling us. Don't do that. So it can go too far because I have a really high blue bar. Good for me. I also have a high red and a high yellow bar, which sort of balances these things out. Sometimes, and sometimes they are super conflicting, and that's mostly a problem for myself. But I think, again, going back to your original question, if you build your self-awareness so you will understand your weaknesses and you will understand your strengths, you have to work on both, I would say. But if you only do things that you're good at, how will there ever be any development of you as an individual? Mm-hmm. I'm only going to do sales. I'm only going to do take these kind of contracts. I'm only going doing these kind of services because I don't want to do it. That's all I know. That's going to be very delimiting, I think. And I think that's not a good path to, you know, depends on what your aims are. I understand that. But I would recommend people to pay attention to both. You don't have to be some sort of self-development guru. And, you know, you don't have to meditate. You don't have to journal. You don't even have to drink green tea, you know, to sort of deal with yourself. You can actually just take it step by step. If you take a report, if you go online on my website and you buy a disc analysis, and there's a page in there that says, these are your weaknesses. Some people don't like that, but it's what it says. These are your weaknesses. And that's a suggestion. If you have filled in the questionnaire correctly, this might be a bit of a struggle for you. Do you recognize these weaknesses? You know, you can cross over 3 out of 7, but 7 are correct. Now, that's something to work on. You tend to sort of lose the details here, or maybe you ask too many questions, or you ask too few questions. Maybe you don't pay attention to people. You know, you can sort of, if you just raise the lower bar 25%, you're going to do so much better and still keeping track of your strengths. I mean, that's why people don't work on themselves enough, because it is kind of work also.
Yeah, I mean, look,
it's not, you can't read a book and then be another person. You have to do something fundamental about you if you want to. That's up to you. But if you want to, you have to sort of pay attention to these things.
If
you listen to people's feedback, if your employee says, well, you know, you're sort of a bit harsh on us every Friday evening, you know, let's go for a beer. And you say, no, get back to your desk. It's 10 minutes left. Not popular. Maybe you could do something about that, you know. Pay attention. That would be my advice, actually.
There's just on the strength versus weaknesses thing. There's a guy that goes to my gym. I don't know his name. I never talked to him. But this guy like only works out chest. He doesn't do legs. He doesn't do arms. He only does chest. And he walks. He just like
what
walks around
like
this
really?
All the time. And like he's got a strong chest. But I'm like, you would look so much better if you just did like one leg workout and maybe some pull-ups. Like let's balance this out a little bit. And I feel like you can do that with your personality traits and your sort of your social skills and your business strengths. Now, I've got a practical question.
Great example. Great example. I'm going to steal that one from you, Ben.
Yeah, go for it. I mean, because everyone's seen that guy. Everyone has picture that person. I want to know just a practical point here for leaders. So let's say they buy some assessments. They have the team take them. They get some feedback. They get some notes. They share it around. And now we have kind of a baseline diagnostic, a baseline framework that we can talk through. Can you give us sort of a roadmap for what motivates the different personality types, the different colors? Like if you're leading a business and you got some reds, you got some yellows, you got some greens, you got some blues, how should your approach to motivating these people change?
Right. That's a two-sided question, actually, and I'm going to get to what I mean by that. To make it simple, red people are driven by competition. They love to compete. If it goes too easy, they're going to get suspicious. Yellow people are driven by social acceptance, you know? They want to be accepted and loved and adored and all of that. It sounds not very charming, but the human mind is what it is. Green people are driven by getting out of conflicts and not getting into any conflicts. They are looking for steadiness and stability.
Harmony.
That's what it is. let's call it harmony, the strive for harmony. That's a good way to phrase it. And blue people are driven by a little bit by perfection, but mostly by quality. If you do something, you better do it right. Doesn't matter if it takes you ages. Right is better than wrong. But those are only on the surface. Beneath the surface, you have something that will explain why the DISC model or the MBTI or Big Five, for that matter, isn't enough. You need to understand exactly that, what motivates people. And there is another tool called workplace motivators. Another translation would be drivers, right? Which is about what makes people tick. Why did you pick that particular job? Why are you living in that area of the city? Why are you in this business of all businesses? Why are you on this position in the hierarchy? Why didn't you go for this or for that or whatever? Something makes you feel good or bad. I actually saw an American study just a couple of weeks ago. 70% of all Americans hate their job.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Not dislike or slightly disapprove. They hate their job. And the reason is, it could be lousy management, absolutely bad leadership, but it mostly because they are in the wrong place. They have forced themselves into some corner, or someone forced them into a corner. They didn't have any options, which is never the truth, really. You can move, you can do something else. But people don't understand what they are driven by. Some people are driven by to learn new things. It's called a theoretical driver, but it's beneath the surface. You can't see that in their behavior. You need to figure someone out quite, you have to go through this in detail, I would say. I can do this because I'm trained at it. I can see that from if I have an interview with someone for an hour, I can figure it out. I can also put another questionnaire in their hands, actually. This is what I work with on a daily basis. It's really fascinating. Other people, they have a drive for money, which is absolutely fine, but most people don't. It's not driven by money. Everybody would like to have money, but some people are chasing money like mad. And some people are good enough with, you know, a good enough life. Some people love aesthetics. Some people have a social driver, which means they love to help other people in service industry, in hospitals and everywhere. They are there not to make money. Some do, but they are mostly there they really want to do good for humanity, which is very beautiful. And on and on and on. Some people are individualistic. It's a strive for power, basically. They put themselves at the top, even if they are green. They will strive for the top because they have this individualistic drive. Power over me, power over you, over the agenda, the media, the decisions, everything. Mostly over their own lives. So if you know what your drivers are, your behavior, your color combinations aren't that important, actually. If you learn how to work on your people skills and you put yourself in the right place, in the right time, if your timing is good and you apply for a job somewhere that actually suits your drivers, this makes me feel good. It's not a battle to get out of bed every morning to go into that position. I love hopping into my truck and just hit the road and then go to work, you know. That's perfect for me. Or I hate sitting by a desk. Well, then don't. Do something. You only live once and all of that. But people usually do not understand the drivers. They just don't get it because no one's ever asked them. What motivates you? Well, you know, I want to be happy. No, hell no. That's not a motivation. That's a state that comes and goes, you know. Now you're happy. Friday evening, then you're happy. You drink too many beers. Saturday morning, now you're unhappy because now you're just miserable, right? Happiness is not a driver. That's an aim that some people are fooled by, you know. But these things are super important, and especially when it comes to recruiting things. When you're recruiting people for a new team, the colors you can deal with, because you can learn how to maneuver those things. If you are a yellow manager and you are recruiting a blue employee, you can learn how to talk to you. Just give him the book and say, okay, you read your part and I read my part, and then we just switch. Oh, that's why we are struggling with our communication. You can figure that out. That's not super complicated. But if you can figure the drivers out, you know he will stay. He will stay on board because he's got the right job. He likes what he's doing.
So you used a word there that I really like, which is maneuver. And like, it's very clear to me, novice leaders make their teams adjust to their style, or maybe there's like actually no awareness about styles at all, and they just kind of are this one-dimensional person to a whole bunch of multifaceted people that they lead. And I don't think I need to over-explain it. That leads to outcomes that the business doesn't want. It leads to unnecessary conflict. It's a less fun place to work. Much more advanced leaders would be a chameleon. Would be a good metaphor. They're able to sort of change their colors. They're able to adapt to the person that they're leading in a certain context. What would be your advice for the business owners listening around how to maneuver around their organization? So they've got a diagnostic. They kind of know who's who. How should they practice that flexibility and show up as the leader that individual person needs? And we would call it situational leadership. This is the type of leader that this person needs in this situation. How do we do a better job of that?
That's a big question. How much time do we have? Well, firstly, you need to understand if there's a challenge or if there's a problem, if there's just a sort of annoying issue that you can deal with Ben over there, and you can just, hey, could you please be here in time next Monday? I love it when you come in at 7 instead of 7:15, you know, is that okay? The best thing to deal with any situation is to deal with it immediately when you understand there is a situation. Let's say there is a problem, deal with it immediately. Do not wait 1 hour. Call him or her up and say, hey, you know what, we need to talk. But the best thing that you can do is to remind yourself of who you are. Let's say that you are the red boss. Let's say, for the sake of argument, you are the red entrepreneur here. You're the one bringing in the business, and these people, they should actually just deliver so you can send out invoices. Let's say someone is, you know, dragging their feet and who knows what's going on. Instead of just venting this in the coffee room when these people are not around, let's imagine you have a green and blue guy who is actually not performing well, or who is performing well, or you just have to talk about the schedule with them. Remind yourself, you are super fast, you are a bit impatient, sometimes you show some intolerance. These people are introverts, let's say. If it's a combination of blue and green, green and blue. Slow down, take it easy. Instead of just stating things, this is what it is, you know, bam, 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 ask questions. I would like to talk to you about X, Y, Z. Can we do that? What's your position on, you know, this client or whatever it is? No. Is there a problem? I don't know. You tell me. They called me twice last week. You know, they have some sort of complaints. Do you know anything? Slow down. Give them time to think. If it's a yellow person, you have to use a different strategy. Then you sort of start by smiling and say, hey, let's grab a cup of coffee, you know? Let's go down to the bakery here and have a sort of a, I don't know, cinnamon bun. I need a couple of minutes with you, you know? How's the weekend? Was it good? What about your kids and your wife and your dogs and your boat and your motorcycle and everything, you know? Pay attention to the individual. I mean, these are all examples. I can give you like a million examples. But remind yourself of who you are. And remind yourself of who this person is. And then you just look at these two pieces. Is it a perfect fit? Sometimes it is. If you are red and yellow and she's red and yellow, you will understand each other perfectly. That's not a big issue. But usually it isn't that easy. On the other hand, if you are yellow yourself, you will have a tendency to recruit only yellow people. Why? Because those people you understand, they are like you. They must be good. It's a sort of upside down bias in a way, if you know what I mean. I don't even know the English word.
It's like attracts like. You know, people feel a certain connection with people. I mean, and like, you know, I think most of our listeners are seasoned enough entrepreneurs to have made this mistake a couple times, maybe in the process of making another one. We all still do it. We're like, man, this guy's amazing, or this woman is amazing. I really vibe with them. I've got really good chemistry. And the reality is when you get on the field of play, which is your business, there are core functions and core skills and core ways of thinking that you do need. And those vibes become a lot less relevant when you are post-interview process and actually doing the thing. And so I think that's why this conversation, this whole framework is very useful for leaders is just helping them understand that people are fundamentally different. I mean, I do believe that. And I think you'd be crazy if you were in denial of that. People are fundamentally different. And like you said at the outset, like it does take everyone to build something great, to build an organization. That you need the attention to detail people in certain areas. You need the reds who are driving and disciplined and sometimes aggressive. You need the yellow, the highly influential, persuasive people to, you know, serve certain roles in your business as well. And it's just a good, this is a good roadmap for people to begin assembling those people and learning how to interact with them a little bit more productively. I got kind of a fun question for you here to wrap, because you spoke about, this is a separate book or a separate sort of philosophy that you talk about, and it just really caught my eye. You write a lot about energy vampires. That doesn't sound good. What's an energy vampire? How do we avoid them?
That is not good. I totally agree. That's sort of in the name there. An energy vampire. Well, just the use of the word vampire here. Do you know what they call them in the UK? They say only vampire. They don't even need to use the word energy, because a vampire is someone who steals your energy. So that's kind of interesting. Here we call it energy thieves. It's the same thing. Well, you know, you sit by your desk, you know, just minding your own business. Everything is running smooth as silk and you're in control of things and it's a good day, you know. You can just tick things off of the to-do list and everything. And then suddenly the door opens and in comes that person and you instantly feel, oh no, not today. It's not one of those days. No, I don't have this energy today. Not him, not her. Oh no, that's your energy vampire. It could be anyone. Usually, when it comes to the colors, it could be a green person seeing a red person, because those people are opposites. Or a yellow person meeting a blue person, also the opposite. It could be some passive-aggressive bastard who doesn't really, you know, lay it out there. Instead, just slams the doors, you know, on the drawers and says, no, I'm not angry, I'm not yelling, you know, these people. It could be some drama queen, some histrionic type. It could be a bully, it could be anyone. It's mostly people who are sort of pushing all your buttons in a negative way. Hence the book on, I don't know, 300 pages, because it's hard to say, because you might react on something, Benji, but I don't. I'm just cool as can be. Well, there's nothing wrong with that guy. Now, he's a complete idiot. I get frustrated every time I see him, you say. And I who is that? I never seen him, because I'm another person than you are, and vice versa. That's why it's so hard to say. Are you bothered by this narcissistic semi-fool or are you not? Well, it depends a little bit, you know.
Well, but what's going on there? Because, I mean, like, I can think of examples in my life, and I'm not going to, you know, not going to name names, of course. And it's all ancient history. But, like, I can think of people who have, like, it's not like they did anything to me. I just can't stand them. Like, there's not a personal attack. They never slighted me. I'm just like, I can't stand that guy. Like, I literally can't be in the same room because it drives me mental. To be honest, you can't even describe why. You're just like, there's something about him. Or there's something about her. What's going on there?
Usually, it could be subconsciously. Someone who looks like, you know, an idiot from school, you know. It could be someone with the same accent that you really hate. It could be, you know, he's wearing those damn boots, you know, it could be he looks like my neighbor. It could be anything.
Yeah.
It could be it could be anything. Usually when you can't sort of spot what it is, it's very subconscious. And we all have those hang-ups, you know, someone who eats their bread like that. Oh, I hate that. Close your mouth. Oh, no, God, no. What is it? Is it a huge problem? No. But it reminds me of your uncle Herbert, you know, who was a complete idiot. So he just annoys you.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing with this is we are all the idiot / the energy vampire in someone's story. That is just the case.
Right.
Both you and I, and we are pleasant, decent guys, right? We are delightful people to be around. But some people...
Debatable.
Would disapprove of that.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
What's wrong with those people? But, you know, that is just, it's part of life. I have accepted it. I am so old now these days. So if you don't love me and if you don't adore me, I guess I have to live with that. You know, I'm not here for you. I'm here for me anyway. So, you know, tapping in on Gary Vee there again, right?
So let's
listen too much to other people sometimes.
Let's close on this, Thomas. What is your sort of final bits of wisdom for leaders who are trying to get the most out of their people?
Be honest. Be a decent manager. Don't play games. Don't try to manipulate people. If you have a question, ask it straight out. Phrase it so it suits red, yellow, green, and blue, but because that's about communication. But be honest. Deal with conflicts as quickly as possible, as I said before. Don't wait ever. Deal with it when it's small instead of waiting 3 months and then fire the stupid idiot because, you know, you couldn't just cope with him. But most of all, I would say, remember the following. It doesn't really matter what you think about these people and how many ideas you have about them and their you know, whereabouts when they don't answer the phone. You will never change somebody else. You cannot change somebody else, but you can change yourself. And I'm not talking about, again, back to what we talked about an hour ago. I'm not talking about violating your personality, absolutely not. But if you can sort of adapt to a certain situation, do that. You're the manager. You're supposed to sort of tweak yourself a little bit in order to lead people. That's your bloody job, really.
Yeah.
Technical term. And if you don't do it, they're going to feel bad. They're going to feel bad. They're going to feel lousy, depressed, and whatever. I'm not talking about, you know, weak people who can't take a few punches. I'm talking about normal people just trying to get along and do the best they can. And if they feel that you have mistreated them, that's on you. Because one thing that we have to remember, and that's super important, I'm not the first one who said this, but it's so, so, so true. And that is, people don't necessarily always remember what you said, but they will remember how you made them feel. That's going to be in their hearts forever. So don't lose your temper. Don't raise your voice. Doesn't matter how angry and mad you are. That's never going to solve anything. Keep your cool and try to sort of de-escalate every possible conflict because that's going to make everything smoother and you're going to make more money.
It's well said.
That's just the way it is.
Thomas Erickson, surrounded by idiots. I really appreciate the conversation, all the work you do. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Take care. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.